Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive discussion on Korra from longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Blueberry Spice Ed.
Hi.
That is Mel. Twinkle Starchild.
Here. Hi.
That's Delaney. Princess Rainbow.
No. I'm not responding to that.
Okay, that is Sam. And Juniper Lightning Bug.
It's me, Jeff. Hi.
Yes, that's Jeff. those names will not continue throughout the rest of the podcast. Today,
although Dylan should be foo-foo cuddly poops.
That wasn't in this episode, it doesn't count.
Well, there were only four bison, so...
Yeah, so it was perfect, four co-hosts, four bison. Today we'll be discussing Civil Wars Part 2.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, and everything, it was a lot to talk about from the episode, and then we'll get to theories at the end. If you've never listened before, this is a Korra podcast for... intensive and casual fans of the show. Podcasts will be up by midnight on Fridays. If they're not up on iTunes by midnight, you can check the podcast page and our Tumblr. Our Tumblr is dongbufang.tumblr.com. Our podcast page is dongbufang.net/podcast. And the episode will be up there if it's not up on iTunes. I can't control when it goes up on iTunes. You can email us at dylan@dongbufang.net, post on the podcast forums at dongbufang.net/forums, and follow us on Twitter @dongbufang. And yeah, so today we'll go over brief news, discuss the episode, get into theories, and answer your emails and voicemails. Gonna go quickly because I think we'll be pressed for time. This podcast, the first thing, the news rating is that, rating for last episode of Korra, Civil Wars Part 1, was a 2.1, I don't even remember, it was 2.1 something million viewers. And it had a 0.6 adults rating. This is the lowest, this is a series low for Korra, as was last week. It's expected that it goes down from the premiere episode of the season. It should be noted that every single one of Nickelodeon's shows is down. Disney is doing much better than them at the moment. And this is just a Nickelodeon problem, really. I would say overall, not a Korra problem.
Do we know the minimum rating for Avatar The Last Airbender?
So... No, we don't. We only have the ratings for Avatar for the upper echelon of episodes. But I can tell you this at least beat some episodes of Avatar because you can tell at least that Avatar got this number or under for some based on how I figured it out. That's not interesting. But yeah, it's not a series low for Avatar or Korra. But yeah, the only thing that's beating Korra is SpongeBob repeats. And possibly Sanjay and Craig, I'm not sure, but really...
I don't like that show. It's a dumb show.
Well, it gets high ratings, like Korra.
It's a stupid show.
Okay, that's good. yeah, SpongeBob repeats the only thing that's doing well on Nickelodeon right now. It's not... Don't worry. And it's already renewed for four seasons anyway. The animation schedule, Studio Mir answered an email and then they posted it on their Facebook page. Studio Mir, which animated Book 1 of Korra, will be animating episodes 7, 8, and 10 to 14. The current animation studio that's doing Korra is Studio Perot, a Japanese anime studio, will continue up until 7 and then do 9. So yeah, we only have to suffer through this animation for a little bit longer.
Are they still like looking over stuff?
The animation's definitely back by now. Mike and Brian still might be doing post-production on the last episodes.
Well, I meant, like, I think there was talk before that Studio Mir had looked over...
Yeah.
The other stuff.
Yeah, that's almost assuredly done by now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's such a harsh word, suffer.
Yeah, I don't think it's awful, but...
It's not the worst animation ever.
Well, bad for Avatar.
You know, it's a miracle we can even animate... It's a miracle people have that kind of patience.
You're so philosophical tonight. Yeah. Wow.
Already, yeah. Anyway, let's get to the episode. Civil Wars Part 2, written by Mike, directed by Ian Graham. I forgot to look up if Ian Graham directed the last episode. I can't remember. But Mike definitely wrote the last episode. And so they aired in separate weeks.
Colin Heck directed last
week. Okay, Colin Heck did do. Yes, I looked up. Okay, Colin Heck did last week. So they're at least storyboarded separately by different groups of people, but both written by Mike. I would say this is its own episode. Like, I think it has its own plot lines throughout the whole thing, even though it's like part two.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go around the horn. Tell me your thoughts on the episode overall, whether you liked it compared to the rest of Korra, overall, what you liked about it, what you didn't like. Let's start with Mel.
This was probably my least favorite episode. Because, I mean, we throw the word pace around a lot, but towards the end of the episode, a lot of stuff happened in a very short amount of time, and a lot of stuff got resolved a little too easily or a little too quickly, and it just felt very rushed. As an episode by itself, it was not very good. As the end of a two-parter, I mean, is probably why it had that rushing, but it was just, it tried too quickly to clean up a lot of plot points, and, yeah, some random things that happened in it were very strange and clunky, like the trial and the imprisonment and all that thing. So I was not a fan of this episode.
Jeff?
Well, gonna be a polarizing one, I guess, because this is like the first one that I might consider rewatching, because I actually enjoyed it, partly because Korra was like actually in character now, and also because they did resolve all this stuff. I mean, yeah, it was a bit fast, but finally, we don't have to, like, oh, when are they going to actually reveal that Unalaq's bad? Or, you know, when are we actually going to get this war going on that we know is going to happen? So, finally, stuff's happening.
It should be noted we try to rewatch the episodes before the podcast. It's not like we're going in cold. Anyway, yes, continue.
So, and also, Icky was amazing. And it was awesome.
Yes.
Yes.
Delaney, what are your thoughts?
Well, what's funny is I agree with everything that Mel said, but I'm with Jeff. I really liked this episode. Like, and what's funny is that everything that Mel said that was, like, wrong with the episode, there was a lot of problems, but, like, it wasn't as bad as, like, the other three episodes. Like, all the problems in the episode were downplayed in comparison to the other three episodes.
How positive.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying it's, like, the best episode ever, but, I mean, I really liked it in comparison to the what we've seen so far. It was really rushed and clunky, and there were some issues. I was like, this is the first episode I actually cared. Like, I was like, oh, look at all this stuff happening. I'm actually into the episode. I'm laughing. This is great. First time I was into it, so I guess that's why I'm pretty happy with this episode.
Sam.
I didn't like it at all.
Explain.
I don't know. Mel, stop laughing at me.
It's fine.
I didn't like the pacing at all. Like, pretty much I agree with Mel with that. I just thought it was really clunky. I didn't care at all about anything ever. The only redeemable part of the episode was the whole Icky stuff. Mm. And Asami was there.
Yes,
I mean,
that's true.
She was.
I'm assuming that we're going to bring up the sexism later, which that was definitely a big issue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And, yeah, I just didn't like it at all. The worst episode thus far.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm undecided whether it was better or worse than last episode. I guess here's my opinion overall the episode. The episode had an A, a B, and a C plot, which we'll get to in a minute. And I thought all of them were handled badly. So overall, I didn't really like it, but there's, the things you remember are Icky and the baby Sky Bison, which was amazing, and the Katang photo, which is also great. And so, like, when I think of this episode, I'm gonna think of that stuff and not the awful stuff, like just the predictability of the A plot and, the sexism throughout again, and the hasty resolution of the B plot, which are all big problems. So I think maybe overall this is the worst episode so far, but I guess I quote unquote like it more, if that makes sense.
From like a viewer's perspective as opposed to like being like really critical of it.
Yeah. But we will be getting really critical of it.
Oh, yeah.
That is our job, yes.
Yes.
A, B, and C plot. It's possible that I just wasn't finding the C plot last episode, but I think this episode definitely has a defined C plot. The A plot, of course, being the trial of Korra's parents and then figuring out that Unalaq is lying and stuff. And, you know, the whole stuff with that. The B plot is Tenzin and Ikki and sibling troubles. And the C plot.
Why do you say Ikki?
Ikki.
Ikki. Do they say Ikki in the show?
They say Ikki.
Yeah. I apologize.
Let's not call her Ikki. That's probably how, like, that's probably why she ran away, Dylan. Like, that's probably why she ran away.
I guess I'm just,
called her Ikki.
I guess I'm responsible. I apologize. And then the C plot, Bolin and Eska. And even though the A and the C plots happened in the same places and they converged at the end, I thought they were definitely different. And it was like, oh, let's hit on this point from the C plot now.
We saw them alone for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess maybe one of the big problems was, or not one of the big problems, maybe a solution would have been not having the C-plot here. In general, I don't like when people say that Mike and Brian spend too much time on romance, because that's demeaning to the plot aspect of romance. Like, I think it's a legitimate thing to have in a show. But in this case, it was not productive. Like, I don't think it was done well, and I don't think it really added anything. So if you dissolve the C-plot and focus more on the B-plot, which was completely rushed, then maybe this episode's better.
Like, the episode wouldn't have lost anything if we didn't have it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, except some really funny lines.
True.
Yeah. Oh, I think one of the other things the episode did well overall, I thought the comedic beats were better in this episode.
I agree. It had me laughing at some points. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess that's maybe another reason why I liked it more, even if the plot laugh. Stuff is well. You don't laugh? Ever? Okay.
I've been harping on the comedy, like, the entire time, so that I agree, like, it was much better this episode.
Yeah, there's no jokes that didn't work, and seemingly the jokes were in the right places.
Oh, except there were poop jokes. I didn't like that.
Well, we'll get to that. I actually thought the poop joke was funny.
No, it wasn't.
We'll get to that. Okay.
Poop jokes are never funny.
Okay, we'll get to that. Cora's parents are arrested. Cora's upset. The judge's name is Hotah, Hotah, according to the credits. So Unalaq's like, Judge Hotah has been appointed. And this opening...
I thought, like, Cora was really, really chill about her parents being...
Yeah, she was just like, yeah. Oh, there they go.
Yeah, I thought that was definitely off.
Making my way down.
So it's like they have a lot of trust in the court system when, like, their court system doesn't make any sense.
Cora's trust in the court system. Just... She had to tell Unalaq last episode to institute a system.
And they don't have a jury, and it's just a judge.
She doesn't like that guy. No. See, Cora remembered that one guy from the Earth Kingdom. And now they do justice.
It was just us.
It's like Judge Judy.
No, it's not. He is Judge Judy, obviously. Cora, yeah, so compare Cora's reaction to her parents being arrested here to her with the judge later.
Like, when she went crazy?
I don't think they work. Like, I think naturally Cora should be more upset in this scene.
Well, especially since she went psycho in the rest of, like, the last half of the episode.
I think she was hoping they'd get off, is the thing. Like, I think she expected them to get off, so she was chiller.
But, like, shouldn't she react differently? Like, I think there's maybe an inconsistency with her character between this and later.
Well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, like, oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, go ahead. I'm just...
Well, it's just, you know, like, this really bothered me when he's like, oh, I'm sure you're right, but so we don't have anything to worry about, right? It's like, then why are we having the trial, Unalaq? Like, what are you playing at? So that's why I feel like Cora should have been like, pointing out some logical fallacies here, because Unalaq wasn't making any sense this episode, and Cora should have been like, no.
It's possible that she was, like, still trying to hold on to him as a mentor, as someone she could trust.
I agree with that, definitely.
And so, yeah.
I can definitely see that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, though. It's just a stark contrast. The next thing is Asami is back, and everything is good again.
Finally.
Even though she talks, like, twice.
Yeah, I was about to say, wait, did she have, like, two lines?
They drew her in the backgrounds of a lot of scenes, though. So
yeah, she's that's perfect, good, you know, though.
Now we need Asami a new Tumblr background.
Asami in the background? No, that's not happening. But yeah, Asami, best character on the show, so it's good that she's back.
Yes.
Eska and Desna come in. Eska says, I'm not on the hunt for you currently. Aubrey Plaza reads that line amazingly.
I'm so glad that I live in Aubrey Plaza's hometown. Because I can, like, walk in the places she probably walked at some point.
Absorb her energy.
That's, like, the least significant person to be walking in their place.
I'm on the hunt for you currently.
She was good in the Parks premiere, for the record.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah. Yes.
What? What's that?
Facebook.
Parks and Recreation is back. Yes, it was back.
Whoa!
It was an hour long premiere.
That was my favorite part. Facebook.
Sorry. Anyway,
that was Parks and Recreation.
Oh, yeah. She was good in that. Yeah. They're looking for Varric,
Why are they looking for Varric?
I don't know. Just to get them involved in the plot. You know, that's
why are two, what are they, like 15, 16-year-olds?
Eternal spirits.
Yeah. Well, Unalaq's probably like, one of those two. You two are being sulks again. Just go find Varric for me or something.
Yeah, I guess. And maybe you
officially arrest him, though.
There's a lot of times when they make a logical jump in the show because they have too much to show. This is one of them. There's ones later. And they're like, they're always... makes sense, but it's noticeable that we jumped without us seeing something, and this is, I think, is one of those things.
Kind of like Zuko and, like, well, I mean, I guess you can think about, like, when, like, Oza sends Azula to do stuff, like, she's the princess of the Fire Nation, she can do whatever she wants.
I think that's a little different.
I mean, I'm not saying it's, like, the same, but, like, I can kind of see that, but then
well,
really...
Well, you can see logic why he sent them. So,
yeah. Yeah, or maybe he's like, you're getting my nerves, leave.
Yeah, it's possible, but we don't see it, so who knows. Sure. I'd also like to compliment PJ Burns' line reading on, yeah, he's a cop.
That was great.
Yeah.
I did like that. That was a good line.
Yes.
And then Aubrey Plaza again, boyfriend, bow to me when I exit. Again, good line. Yes, my sweet koala otter. Have we seen koala otters?
No.
Probably. No.
It seemed like Bolin was kind of making up an animal.
I don't think we've even mentioned koalas have even been mentioned.
Yeah, I don't know if we... Wait. Koala no, bear? Have we seen koala bear?
Koala bear. No, they mentioned koala bear because they're like, surely you mean his platypus bear or his koala bear? And it was like, no.
Koala bears are actual thing!
Yeah,
it's just
yeah, it like, is a koala bear. I don't know if that's true. No,
I definitely they said that.
I seem to remember koala sometimes. I'm not sure.
I love how you said he made up an animal. I'm like, all the animals are made up.
If you listen to him reading the line, it's kind of koala otter, you know, like he says it like
true.
That.
No, but, like, do you remember when they had the otters in the Northern Water Tribe in Siege of the North when Zuko was all swimmy and stuff?
Weren't those, were those seal otters?
I don't know.
Okay, what is a
they're
seal
penguin
otter?
Otters. They're penguin otters.
Penguin otters, yeah.
They're penguin otters? Say. I thought they
were... Whoa, actually, we have koala otters. They exist.
Thanks, Jeff.
They exist, okay.
Yeah. They're, I think they were seen at, like, 201.
201? I don't remember that in 201. Anyway, let's not spend the whole episode on this. Asami disapproves of this. I wrote that because she said a line. So I have to note whenever Asami says a line. Yeah.
She said a line.
Varric is in the suit, not sweet, as I wrote in the outline. And Julie is in there, too. That was, again, with the comedic moments being there, that was very funny.
Yeah, I actually liked the Julie Varric stuff
a lot. I think I
spelled
this wrong. I think it's... J-U-L-I, I think I saw in the credits is how her name is spelled. Maybe. I may be getting that wrong. And then Varric... This was a little odd, the Varric bribing thing. Delaney, you to comment about this?
Oh, like, it was so weird because, like, Bolin's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's like, what? So, for the first time, what we're seeing is that, like, Team Avatar's like, yeah, we're just gonna do all this underhand bad stuff. We're not gonna fight the good fight. We're gonna do whatever we can to win. So we're gonna bribe people.
Yeah, definitely not. Wouldn't have flown with Aang.
Maybe in the Runaway, but that's it. Maybe in the Runaway, and that's
yeah.
it.
Flown. Yeah. Jeff linked to koala otters. They were in the Waterbending Master 118 in Avatar. Apparently their only appearance.
Well, at least we have some record of them.
I love the Avatar Wiki articles because when they have nothing to say, the koala otter enjoys backstroking through the icy waters of the Northern Water Tribe. Okay, so you saw it in one shot, so that's his behavior? No, it's not.
How did we forget koala sheep? Like, that was like the whole point
koala
of like...
Sheep.
Oh, yeah, koala sheep.
I knew
yeah.
there was koala something fluffy.
They're adorable.
He, like, shoved his... He screamed into the koala sheep.
Yes. Koala sheep are the best, and also sheep. That's an old DF joke. Anyway. Varric Bear. I don't remember who said that. Bolin.
Bolin
said that, yeah.
No, it's a Barrick.
I don't think he said Barrick.
He should have.
Okay, most important part of the episode.
That was good.
Baby Sky Bison.
Oh, yeah, that was...
I almost died.
It's like, the scene
that was in a very... That was in a very important part of the episode.
The scene wasn't even written that well, but it's just... Oh my god. I'm pretty sure Brian probably drew these Baby Sky Bison.
It's a Baby Sky Bison tea party. Like, what is there not to love about this?
It's actually the best thing ever.
Like, it, and what's funny is, like, it has so much, like, this was the stuff that we've been missing from Korra that was so, like, interwoven into Avatar that they're trying to create in Korra. cute animals. Like this random, yes, cute animals. And like the random like stuff. You're like, what are they even doing? But you love it anyway.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's like this. It's like time off from the plot.
Like Peddly Poops, like that.
I like the chat scrunch. Oh my goodness!
The transcript
of Sam and I during that scene.
Yeah, great.
We had a battle. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Iki Tea Party. So let's mention Iki's voice. I did check, and she's still voiced by Darcy Rose Burns. I don't remember, and she is young, so it's not like this is an older person voicing Iki. And yeah, but she sounded different in this.
Well, it could have been, like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I don't know if it was her sounding older, or...
Well, I feel like, because, like, traditionally, and I think this was, like, a big point about Avatar, that traditionally you have older women who play, like, children, because they don't grow. I know that's mainly with, like, boy characters. But, like, I guess this kind of makes sense that she's a child, so, like, or younger, so it makes sense that her voice may have changed a little bit, or...
Yeah, well, probably her voice actress's voice changed, you know? Like, I mean, yeah. I know... Jenora's voice actress, Kiernan Shipka, much better, and her voice did noticeably change. She's in Mad Men.
Yes.
So, and you can, like, maybe progress her, notice her progression more, because she's in other things, Darcy Rose Burns. I'm not sure if she's in anything else. But yeah, it's, I think it's that plus the animation. I don't know if Iki looked right.
Oh, yeah, she looked different, definitely. Like, the facial expressions, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad change. Like, I actually like it. Like, Iki seems Iki. I can't believe I said that. She ran away. Oh, God. Okay. like, I feel terrible. She, like, I do think, like, I think I thought it added to, like, the scene that she seemed older and was, like, more in control of herself.
That's true. I thought it did maybe suit that. Also, I think everyone would find her much more sympathetic in the scene than in the book one premiere.
Yes.
Iki is amazing, and
I hated her for the first three episodes.
You all need to accept how amazing she is.
She is. I mean, I hated her because of the... Sorry, Sam, continue.
Yes, Sam.
I'm sorry. I kind of wanted to bring up how you guys were talking like a minute ago about how like her voice actress kind of sounds a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring up like on Hey Arnold, the person who voiced Helga like was the same throughout the whole entire run.
Was Helga voiced by an adult or a young
person? No, she was voiced by a kid.
Oh.
But it was the same person throughout the whole entire...
Interesting.
So, that's what happened.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting point. So, it doesn't always happen. I also think... I mean, I don't know how old Helga's voice actress was. Maybe she was, like, 14. Like, it's a difference between 10 and 14, you know? In terms of...
It's not that big in, like, girls, though.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't know that. But...
Then again, I don't know. Mel, was your voice deeper when you were, like, 10?
I actually got my tonsils removed, and that kind of affected it, so I'm not a good analog. Oh, okay.
My voice got deeper, like, as I got older. Like, I sound like
a man.
Well,
it doesn't happen as, like, drastically.
It's not as uniform as boys, I guess.
Oh, yeah. My uniform is boys, what?
Uniform as in the same. Like, boys, it's like voice gets...
Yeah, they all go through it, yeah.
Anyway.
Listen to Dylan in the beginning podcast is hilarious.
Yeah,
so please don't do that.
It's the best.
Yeah, it is the best.
So, the skull necklace.
that was the best.
Skull. Hello, welcome to Friends.
Oh my god, please stop. The skull betrothal necklace, wedding at sunset. So, here's the start of the problems. Last scene that we saw from this, the bow to me when I leave, it was funny. It wasn't necessarily... She was... In power, like, you can worry about Bolin in a bad relationship, but now we start to see Eska as defined as crazy, like the stereotypical crazy girlfriend.
Yeah.
And to me, this is a sexist portrayal. I don't know why it's necessary that she becomes... I mean, it's not my role to judge what Meg and Brian are doing, but it's very stereotypical, and it's like, if this was a boyfriend, it wouldn't be doing this. Like, that's not a reasonable thing.
There's no crazy boyfriend trope.
Yeah, it just wouldn't happen. Yeah. And I don't know. It's just, it goes from, like, I was shipping a Boleska very hard, and it goes from that, and it's super funny.
We all were. We were rooting for it.
Yeah, and to now it's just, it's just going into, like, not only is it not just not good anymore, it's actively one of the worst parts of the episode, I think, of this. I don't know.
And it doesn't even, like, serve a purpose.
It's apparently important to the plot. She comes in at the end, but I don't understand.
Well, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Oh, dude, in the outline, you totally missed the best part.
What'd I miss?
Asami facepalming.
<That's> so true.
Not exactly a line, but...
Yeah.
That was,
I mean,
definitely
it is an Asami action, so I should have noted everything she does.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially character. Since you did like nothing in this episode. Everything
that was that was like the embodiment of how I feel about this episode.
She just face. Can we get a GIF of Asami facepalming?
Yes, yeah. I'm sure it's out there already.
Yeah, okay. So I apologize for missing that.
Apology accepted.
guilty of treason. Oh, so, okay, so. Here, okay, so there's two distinctions to be drawn in sexism in this episode.
Oh,
I think one is in-universe sexism, as in, it's not Mike and Brian writing this, or specifically Mike writing this, that the sexism is coming from. It's a character acting in a sexist way that could happen in the universe. And then there's something that happened in the episode that comes off as sexist, that it seems like it's the writers doing and not the characters. I think this, the judge letting Senna off and convicting everyone else is, so it's of course the woman wasn't involved in the scheming.
Yeah.
That's not realistic. I think that makes sense that the judge would
do
that.
The mastermind.
Well, she's not. But I think
Senna's the villain.
Regardless of whether you agree with her being innocent or not, I think it makes sense for the judge to instantly not charge her. She would be capable of that.
Could you, like, label this as chivalry instead, or is this, like...
I don't really think it's chivalry. I think it's demeaning in the aspect of thinking that she is not capable of being part of this
body. Of course a woman can't do that!
Yeah. There's another aspect, I think, that I was really mad about this part of the episode. But then and then later in the episode, I realized what it maybe could have been. Unalaq told him, what to say. So Unalaq doesn't have an issue with Senna. It's just, he probably wouldn't even have... Like, he probably just sentenced the rest of them because he didn't want to look like he was just sentencing his brother. So yes. I feel like that might be it.
So on a deeper plot level, this is Unalaq getting sympathy for himself or legitimacy by letting Senna off.
I think it's also, getting Kor's favor.
Yeah, exactly. But when we watch the scene as it happens, we're not thinking about that. That happens later.
Yeah.
So we're watching the sexism from the judge in the moment.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't think this specifically is Mike being sexist. I think that's later. So we'll get
to that. I think that comes later.
Yeah. Life sentence instead.
I love
blah,
how they're
blah,
all
blah.
Like, gasp,
yeah.
Being sentenced to death. Treason is punished by death everywhere. Everywhere.
I mean, I don't know about everywhere. It's punished by death here.
And Korra makes a straight-up death threat.
By the way, here I mean in the United
States. That was pretty... That came out of nowhere.
Oh,
she
yeah,
said,
yeah. She says that, and then the judge is like,
whatever.
Doesn't react.
Yeah, because she's like, if you end their lives, I'll end yours, or if you take their lives, I'll take yours. I'm like, whoa!
Can they throw the avatar into jail just out of chaos?
Oh, they can.
So this doesn't really make sense in the
I
scene.
I don't think
looking back, if looking as the as every action the judge makes being told by Unalaq, and in desire to curry Korra's favor, it makes sense that they wouldn't get mad at her for this, I think. It's still very odd. In context of the scene.
Well, it's part of it is what we were talking about earlier is how, Korra, she has, no emotion this entire time, and then she just, this rage erupts.
She's upset here. She's just trying to control herself, I guess.
I mean, it's understandable, but it's what is going on?
Yeah, I don't know how I'd react if one of my parents was, sentenced to death right in front of me.
Yeah. I think this is the start of the predictability of the A-plot. Once you see Unalaq go up and talk to him, it's like, okay, we've seen this from tons of other shows and other stuff before. The whole thing was set up and you know what else is going to happen. It's I guess my overall opinion of this is Mike and Brian want to have more of a plot structured show with more of a quote unquote HBO type show with stuff happening all the time. But what's the point of doing that if you're just going to go on treaded along, I don't know how to phrase this, have been
treaded ground.
Treaded ground. Yeah. Why would you do this if you're just going to rehash plot lines we've already seen? I don't really understand it.
I can't. I don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
That's exactly how I felt watching that. That's really the big problem I think with Korra. This season is just it's just cliche after cliche after cliche, and it's why? We're not getting anything out of it.
Yeah, I think it takes away from the great comedic beats, which I think are in this episode at least. The character moments that are good, like the Iki stuff. And it just, we can focus on really anything else. It's great that we're having plot, but let's vary it up a little bit, I guess. Though yeah. I think the big reason the plot in book one was successful to a certain extent is because it was like, who is Amon? And yeah. we had that going over the whole time. And
who is Unalaq?
even if Amon ended not satisfactorily, at least most of the season it was really interesting.
Well, it's because, like, Amon, like, you didn't know what he was going to do. You didn't know who he was, and, like, crazy stuff happened. Like,
yeah, he wasn't really predictable either, his actions.
Like, he did crazy stuff, and you're like, oh my god, what's going to happen next? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, Korra, season two. This is easy to predict.
Yeah. Even though we don't necessarily know where they're going with the plot later this season, right now it's very obvious. At least within the context of the episode. More back to Iki and awesomeness. Iki flat out says, being part of a family is hard, huh, Daddy? Hey, let's spell out the themes of this, what we're trying to get across here. Yeah, let's do that.
Being a part of family is hard. I hate being a part of a family.
Wow.
I just want to be alone with, like, a cave with baby sky bison.
Yeah, that would be pretty ideal.
Can you imagine how cute a baby sky bison pet would be? It'd be amazing.
Like, you'd die.
You would die from the cuteness? That's a little extreme.
I'm talking, like, Despicable Me, like, it's so fluffy I'm gonna die. Like, it would actually happen.
I mean, baby sky bison over family, definitely.
Over family? I don't know.
I would trade my mother for...
Family of...
I don't know, that seems pretty reasonable.
A family of baby sky bison.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And my other favorite line from the scene is Iki saying, I know you really bonded with her, about Tenzin to Blueberry...
Blueberry Spice Head.
Blueberry Spice Head. I love Jeff. I love you throwing that in, Jeff. Anyway, yeah. that was, I don't know, this whole thing. Even though it was written really, like, let's spell out the themes, let's really, it works because of how great it is. Like, what's going on.
Why didn't they take the Sky Bison home is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, well, it's like they're in the, where is home, first of all, but they're in the...
Where do the Sky Bison sleep?
Now we hear the fireworks. Sorry. Anyway, just, I guess, mute for when you're not talking for now. Not at all. Korra chasing... Okay, here we go. Here's the... if we're getting into critical... I think we've been mostly positive on the episode. Well, that's not true. But we've been half positive on the episode so far.
Half positive.
Now we're going to get in the parts that I really didn't like. A few scenes in a row, which I thought were maybe the worst of the season so far. This is the first of them. Korra is chasing the judge. I don't even remember his name anymore.
Hota,
yeah, it ends in an H. With Bad and, okay, so Korra riding thing. We see it in a trailer. We saw it in a trailer before. It's, her face is, like, disfigured. This is an example of the animation being off. So then we get Korra threatening the judge, which I actually didn't really have a problem with. We can discuss this. I think a lot of people, so I want to draw a distinction here. A lot of people are going to take issue with Korra's actions on a moral level in terms of her being the Avatar. And we need to, I think, separate our anger with Korra from our anger with the portrayal of Korra.
She's a loose cannon cop.
Like, I think the scene made a lot of sense for Korra's character. Last season, we saw Korra not help Tarlok up in When Extremes Meet, and she crashes him to the ground, and it's very violent, and she's capable of this. We've seen it before. So I think this characterization is consistent, maybe not consistent with her getting upset earlier in the episode.
She's a loose cannon cop on the edge.
I don't know. Delaney or Jeff, what do you think of Korra's actions?
I was honestly a little bit taken aback when she put his head in Naga's mouth, but, I mean, that was about it as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Delaney?
Well, like, I agree that, like, this is, like, I didn't have a problem with it, but I was like Jeff. I was like, oh my god, she's just sticking his head in her mouth, like.
And that's really well-written teeth, or well-drawn teeth.
And, like, the Naga line was my favorite. Like, that was awesome. But, like, I actually think it's genius. Like, I'm really happy with this. This is another reason why I really like this episode. We're having some character development for Korra. Is it good character? Is she going to be a good person? Maybe not, but we're having character development. And it's very Kyoshi-like. Like, you didn't mess with Kyoshi. She's crazy.
See, I don't know if this is development. I think this is consistent with her character before. See, like, I don't think we need... Okay, so we always talk about character development. This is actually one of my least favorite things. In terms of what people talk about when they're analyzing stuff. I don't think characters need to develop, and I've probably made this point several times. They can develop, but they can also just stay the same. And, like, that's valid. Characters are allowed to be consistent people. I think most of us don't, quote-unquote, develop over the course of a, quote-unquote, season. So, like, Cora can still be hot-headed. She doesn't need to not be hot-headed. I don't know, maybe she becomes more, quote-unquote, avatar-y. But that being said, I think we're also, when we think of Cora expecting her expectations in terms of the Avatar, we think of Aang. And Aang, I think, acted differently than Avatars we've seen in the past.
So I'm sure that Kyoshi would be proud of Cora.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Kyoshi.
Bathed in their blood.
I mean, I also wonder, like, what Avatar Kurik would do.
Yeah, we never really saw him address.
He'd go surf.
Yeah, he'd go surf. That's all we saw him do, yeah.
Surf and, like, be sad about his wife. Mm-hmm. It's true.
So, but getting to the bad part of the scene is, first of all, the judge's voice here seems very contrived to me, I guess. When his head is in Naga's mouth. First of all, Naga's really well trained.
I kind of like the spirit animal, like, being more involved.
That's true, yeah. I do like that.
I mean, Appa was awesome, and he did awesome things.
He's a spirit animal.
He's a spirit... Shut up, okay? Spirit animal.
I don't know if that's what they are, but okay.
There's companion. Like animal guides.
More like animal companion, yeah.
That's what I meant, and I said spirit animal. I apologize.
I think spirit animal is valid, too. But anyway, Mel, feel free to talk. Don't need to be muted. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Mel has fireworks in the background, so I don't know why they're having fireworks on September
20th. It's homecoming.
Oh, great.
Do you have fireworks for homecoming?
Apparently.
I don't think I have fireworks for homecoming. Unalaq has been telling the judge what to do, and he got his father banished. I guess that part, it's not like, oh, of course that happened, but it's like, that still seems like we saw it coming, even if we necessarily didn't. It's
like I expected them to eventually get there.
It's like not right away.
It's like very, very quickly.
Yeah, they're moving the plot along very quickly. It's like Unalaq, they've been saying Unalaq's not... They've been holding on to the Unalaq's not terrible plotline, and now they're just devolving it very fast.
Maybe they're like throwing everything away.
Yeah, which is interesting. I want to see where they go next, but...
For this episode,
I would say it's unsuccessful. The way they execute this. This scene specifically... wasn't interesting plot-wise because we expected it and because of how quickly they laid everything out. Agree? Disagree?
Sure.
I was just glad it happened, honestly.
Finally, it's like finally.
Yeah, it's just like finally we can stop
pretending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad this isn't the main plot. Like, clearly this isn't going to be the main plot.
Yeah. We'll talk about this later with theories, but I'm starting to think the season's just going to have two halves. I think we'll get the Unalaq the first half and we might get something else the second half. Maybe they're related, maybe they're not, but we'll see. Bumi, good scene. Bumi talking the Aang statue.
It was kind of pointless.
Pointless, but you know they needed to work in Bumi and Kaya.
It was cute.
It was good. I like that.
Yeah, I like.
I'm sorry, I wasn't an airbender, but I tried to save the world
it. Yeah, and he said, "Hope made you proud," and then Bumi and Kaya hug.
His voice acting was really good in that one.
Yeah, definitely warming up to Bumi's voice actor. Who I can't remember. I have Unalaq's voice actor down now. It's Adrian Littrell, but I can't remember who he's voice actor.
Some guy.
Yeah. Anyway. So that scene was nice. It's in the middle of bad scenes, though, so it's somewhat not memorable.
And then the pacing was just really bad after. Just hug, bam.
Well, yeah, and I guess this scene I didn't have too much of an issue with, but later. Bust Dad out of jail. Cora goes back to the place where they were talking before with Varric and the bear suit. Let's talk about sexism. Cora says, so Bolin comes in the outfit, I don't care about that. Pabu looked cute in his outfit, but that was it.
Yeah, Pabu did look cute.
Yeah.
That made me laugh. Pabu.
I approve, Sam. Anyway, Cora says, yes. I'm pretty sure the guy is supposed to give the girl the betrothal necklace. So, let's start with this line. Cora saying this, Cora's limited perceptions of the world. Also, the world that they're living in has limited viewpoints. Like, that's... Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to say. Cora was closed off in childhood, so she has expectations for how things work based on what she was told. Two, this is how things work in this world, probably.
And also, particularly in the water tribe culture, it's very traditional.
Yes. Yeah. We haven't seen enough examples to know if it's universal, but I guess it is. We've only seen a few, you know, like...
Oh, come on. If Toph ever got married, I really doubt.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It was like, tough.
Bolin then says, I guess Eska didn't get the memo. So, Bolin before has been the least sexist character on this show.
Bolin, come on.
I know, like.
And like all this season he's been like saying the sexist stuff.
You just have to stop.
It's like, why are you saying this? I guess it makes sense. It doesn't make sense with how he acted in book one. You know, buffest, toughest girl.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Giving Cora flowers, you know, all that stuff was great. This is just, I don't know. More than anything, though, I think these lines are more than the realism from the characters. This is, I think, a sexism from Mike. It's not that it's not unrealistic that they would say, but why are they saying it? And they're definitely giving, you know, kids that are watching the wrong message. Like, for sure.
People still believe that.
People, I mean, like, even adults believe still that, like. Yeah. You anyway, know, the point we're trying like, to make, if you're like, no, a lot of people aren't following our train of thought here.
I'm not.
Women don't have to be the one proposed to. It can be any, either way. It's not bad if women are proposed to, but anything, they can propose to a man, and it shouldn't be unusual, and it should be accepted, and you should be, and not only that, but they should be able to do that. Like, societal expectations are so much that it would be odd for that to happen, I think, even to
be, like, demasculating.
Yeah, the man would feel demasculated, which is not the attitude to have. But yeah, so that's why this is,
well,
in general.
What was the attitude like back in the 1920s?
Well, certainly it was this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying it's an unrealistic portrayal by the show, but I'm saying it oozes. The scene before, it was like, it made sense in the context of the story and the plot why he's doing that. This is unnecessarily included, and why, and it also, like I said, gives a bad message to children.
Oh, it's something just interesting that when Jeff was talking about how was it in the 1920s, it's kind of interesting because Avatar Last Airbender, I think we talked about this for a while, is like, it's the agrarian society before the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone, it actually was equal. Like, you know, you don't think about it that way, but everyone did the work. So I feel like that was more, like, we saw a lot more, we saw less sexism in Avatar, but now,
it's
which is what's weird.
I haven't, like, taken classes on this, but if you look at sexism in history, it's, certainly, I think I've read articles on this, this is way back, but humans developing agriculture, it went from an equal society before to more of the male-dominated society we have, and I think
that's what's weird about it.
I think also the Industrial Revolution brought upon more inequalities, too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Because it's the separation. That's where we get the separate spheres.
So it would make sense that Korra's more sexist than Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing I was trying to... Like, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I was expanding upon this, yes.
It doesn't make it right,
but...
Again, though, we need to differentiate between in-universe sexism and out-of-universe sexism. And then Varric says, look, the only way to deal with crazy women is to lie big and leave fast. So...
I feel like that's really his... He just says horrible things. Like, I feel like that's just his character.
I guess there's two problems. Two comments. One, this didn't bother me as much as the last two lines because I don't care about Varric as much, but I think more overall, the problem with this is that Varric is supposed to be a sympathetic, funny character. Like, this line is supposed to be funny, and we're supposed to laugh at him being sexist, which I don't think is good.
True.
I wish Mel was here to discuss this with us, but she's on BRB. But yeah, this line is played for laughs, and it really shouldn't be, because stereotyping... okay, so Mel might not be back for a little bit, says Sam. That is bad. But she's helping people. Yay, Mel. I don't even remember what I was going to say.
Stereotyping is bad, something like
that. I don't want to talk about, like, Varric a little bit. I know that it's kind of, like, a part of his character to be that fast-talking, like, 1920s businessman guy, and, like, you know, sexism is inherently part of that character, but...
I mean, his secretary, for example...
Yeah.
Doesn't make it okay.
See, so there's two sides to this. One, it makes sense that the Varric type character would say this.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it okay.
Two, but on the other hand, it's the way it's played is for laughs.
Yeah.
So,
well, children can't differentiate between this. Like, they're watching this and they're like learning
even
things.
Even most people, I don't think, can't differentiate between.
They can't
this.
Separate the two.
I don't think. Yeah. I mean, even me watching this, like, that's a line you laugh at, and it's like, oh, that wasn't cool. So I think this is an example of both Meg and Brian and the show and in-universe sexism, and one of them is okay, one of them is not okay. So yeah, that scene was not good. Unalaq moves dad.
I like how you said this. Unalaq moves dad.
Okay, so then
dad
they go
to NWT.
Northern Water Tribe. So then they go to the basement. We thought this this series of Unalaq waterbending the fire coming out that we saw in the trailer would be in Republic City, but it's just underground in the
southern. I wanted to say that the backgrounds look really nice. Ooh, in this underground place.
Compliments, yay. Yeah, I mean, I think the background paintings in general are incredible.
They're always really nice.
Oh, the Water Tribe is gorgeous.
Emily, yeah. Tetri, and what's the guy's name? I can't remember.
Some guy.
The big reason to get the art book is for the background paintings. They're just gorgeous. So this scene is also very predictable and just not exciting, I guess.
Dialogue was so weird. What are they even doing?
It's very abrupt. I think the
remember who you are.
I think the most notable line was Korra saying, "I'm done being manipulated by you." So
that's like Tenzin's line of
when did Korra,
you're just doing this to gain more power.
When did Korra come to realize this? We never really saw that. Is she just sad?
Well, like right after he talked to the judge, or she talked to the judge, probably.
Yeah, but that's the realization that he's lying. But I think that's a separate thing for.
I'm surprised we didn't get like a Korra Mako scene, because we've been getting Korra Mako scenes about this the entire time, and then they completely leave it out of this episode where we could have actually seen a moment of her having realization.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of wish we had that realization, because it's just like, hey, bam, I'm done being manipulated by you.
The From the Spirit World podcast endorses an additional Makora scene. Let it be noted.
And I hate
those
Mako,
are like the so only those are like the only times you get insight on what Korra is thinking.
Yeah, so I guess okay, that's a good point, Sam. I would have loved to see Korra's thought process here. Instead, we just see her talking to other people involved in the plot.
It's just the scene cuts. We're missing so much.
Yeah, I agree. This is another example of stuff being left out, I would say, like I said before. Unalaq says he doesn't need Korra for the Northern Portal. That's kind of just thrown out there, and we don't see it expanded upon. Is he bluffing?
Are they ignoring the portals now?
What's going on with the portals? We don't really know. I assume that line is thrown in there for later, because I still think the portals will be important. And then we see a fight that's, I guess, well animated, but it's
meh.
Any comments, Jeff?
No, I didn't see any problems with it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I just thought it was somewhat unexciting. This, I guess, is in the context of the scene. It wasn't the fight's problem.
Well, they're just standing, like, they're like, no, no, fight, fight, and then, like, oh, it was all of a sudden airbending.
I guess
once again, we have, like, firebending punch followed by airbending.
Yeah, that's no true. Sense. I guess I was surprised Korra couldn't take him down earlier. Like, I feel like Korra can beat him easier.
I mean, you're the Avatar. Yeah. Come on.
What are you doing?
Well, also, Korra's, it should be noted, you're the Avatar. Korra seems to be lacking in power, as we saw from, Jeff has a theory on this that we heard last time, but it's, even if
which
she
which I think is mostly debunked, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay, but even if she
I
was,
actually think it's supported after this
we'll
episode.
We'll see. Okay, let's get to that later. That platypus bears pooping money.
That wasn't funny.
So, this line.
I laughed the first time. The second time, I was like,
I laughed the first time, then it was coming up. I was like, oh, this dumb line is coming up. And then I laughed again when I rewatched it.
I'm like a Debbie Downer, but I'm sick of poop.
I think
I'm
this random voice actor
drips.
Just really sold this line for me. I don't know. I thought this was just. It doesn't
the way
make,
he said the line was really weird. It was funny.
It's the dumbest plot device. It didn't need to be included. It's the dumb. This is an example of a bad humor beat, but I thought they pulled it off somehow. I don't know how.
Right, and I think it was because they were replacing Milo fart jokes, because Milo wasn't there to have one.
Yeah,
so
fake platypus bears pooping money is much better than Milo fart jokes, I would say.
Well, I feel like they had to do it. I mean, they had him, Julie is dropping money out of the platypus bear, so like they had to do it. Like, I understand.
It would be funny to like see Julie, like actually, like camera
yes.
go into the suit and
oh
just see Julie in there.
That has to be the most awkward positioning ever.
Yeah.
It's not like the platypus bear. I mean, the platypus bear is big, but like, there's a grown man in there and a grown woman. Like, how does this work?
I don't know.
So now we see actually just incredibly fast paced stuff happening.
You spelled platypus wrong.
I apologize. There's a red line under it.
Platypus.
Platypus.
There's they get on the boat and it's Lyric's like, why didn't you just say so? And then it turns the plane into a boat. Or there's a boat coming up from the plane coming up from the boat.
He's like
there
Batman. Like, what is he even doing?
So he's Bruce Wayne.
I guess we should note Miyazaki influences here. Miyazaki always says boat planes, even though this wasn't actually a boat plane. It's a boat. It's a plane on a boat.
It's a plane boat. So
he likes flying a lot.
Yeah, firebending for liftoff. That was pretty cool.
The same mention of the jet.
But it happens so fast. It's like, why? It's why is it even? It's not why is it even there. It's just it just goes over your head, I think. They go on to the other boat.
The CG's so bad.
There's this cool shot of them coming onto the boat, which I thought was they like made like really cool. But it happens so fast, the effect almost doesn't like goes over you. Like you probably don't know what I'm talking about. Like they like roll onto the boat and they have the elements up like that they're bending behind them.
I was hoping that they like because they landed near a turret. They really should have, like, taken it over and shot everyone on the board.
You were hoping that they would shoot everyone on board?
They would take control of the turret and non-lethally shoot everyone.
How does that work?
Well, you know no one ever dies from those things.
We've seen people. So it should be noted that they put the waterbend people off the boat. Presumably yes. They don't
Is it die, me, or does, like, the bending animation look kind of bad?
I don't know. I didn't notice. It was too fast-paced.
I knew there was something off about it, but so I guess that's what it was. Like I was like, "What is going on?" Watching this scene. Did they have to blow up the plane? Did they have to?
Obviously.
Yes. Make it dramatic.
They could have like had it go. Oh, never mind. They couldn't. Sorry.
At least they got Asami off the plane.
I had a 2-minute freak out. I was like, "Did Asami get out?" Like,
yeah.
Like,
I was freaking out.
I mean, it makes sense because they like can't land the plane on water. But yeah.
But then, I mean, how does Asami feel? Like she's just like, "I'm just gonna crash this plane."
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it was Varric, so she's like, "Whatever."
It was Varric piloting it. Yeah, we see the shot of the boss. You're not going to believe this. And then it's like, yeah. That beat didn't work. We were noting humor beats that do work. That one, I don't think.
That didn't even make any sense. Like, it wasn't even funny. It was
I got what they were trying to do, but it didn't make. It wasn't funny.
Yeah. I got it the second time I watched it. The first time I was what? Like,
oh, they're noting that a platypus bear is driving the thing. Yeah, at first time I watched it, it was like, are they realizing that there's a guy inside there? Oh, they're really going to realize Varric's there. But no, that wasn't the point of that.
Yeah,
they just had, just one line more, you know? It's like, you'll never believe this, there's a platypus bear driving the boat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just flesh it out a little more.
Or they could have just, left it out, because it wasn't even that funny.
I mean, if they're going to include it, they need to do more. Like, and again, this is another example. Take the C-plot out, and you have more time for this stuff. Siblings, then we go back, fight off. They go off the boat with the prisoners, and it happens very fast. And then
that's like a completely. What were we saying earlier? How things just happen off screen,
we don't see them.
That's kind of something. That's like the glaring one that I noticed.
Like, how did they get off? Mm-hmm.
I was totally guessing thinking that Unalaq was going to trick him. And they're
I was hoping
no
maybe like a boiling rock sort of thing, but
it was a really sad version of boiling rock. Like, it was pitiful.
They just skipped the whole, prison break.
On the plus side, there's 100% less Suki, so, back to the B-plot. Sibling pairs make up. Okay, this scene,
it was really dumb.
I was
so mad at the air babies.
Why can't the adults just make up like that? Let's go play air scooter.
Yeah, I thought the kids making up was... So, okay, the kids making up was proportional to how much they focused on that plot before, which was not at all. So that's allowed to happen very fast.
The Mila line was fine, but when Janora said it, I was just like, Janora, why are you hurting my character? Like, I was upset.
I mean, I think they're doing a good job showing Janora's kid side and along with the more adult side. I guess that's what I took from
that. Like, I feel like... But then, Pima made a point to make them apologize, and they didn't even apologize.
Janora said, I'm sorry. Mila didn't say, I'm sorry, though.
But, it wasn't even... I don't know. It
wasn't sincere. Yeah, sure.
I was just like, God. And they're like, air
point
skate,
was
that was fine.
The point was like, let's go. We're past this. Like,
yeah.
And I think another like a theme that they're trying to give off is like, let's emulate kids here. They can make up and forget very easily.
Yeah.
And
do they actually do that? I don't remember.
Children. I think so.
It's been a while since I've been one of these children.
These children.
Yeah. So the bad part was how quickly the kids make up. I guess it's supposed to be supportive.
That was good for me.
I guess, so here's the problem. They spent the entire B-plot last episode fighting and fighting and fighting. And they make up because Tenzin realizes it's not worth it. And Bumi and Kaya have a moment with Aang's statue and with themselves. But it demeans the fighting that happened in the last episode, I think. Not demeans, diminishes.
Well, it makes the conflict look, not important at all. And really, the conflict, it brought up a lot of important issues that you would think would be really touched upon, but they just completely, oh, well.
Yeah, and they leave it off it. Tenzin says, I'm sorry for ignoring some of Dad's less ideal traits.
What was Aang actually like? I want Katara's perspective. She would know. Yeah. She was there.
This scene...
they resolved the wrong part of the conflict, I think.
The scene wasn't actively bad, but it didn't...
It was too short.
It was too short, and it didn't bring the legitimacy to this B-plot that was lacking, that was not there from the earlier parts. Like, the earlier parts were cute, but, okay, it's now let's resolve the actual plot of this part, and we didn't. We just see it happen very fast.
There was, like, no point to it.
Yeah. I'm fine with it being there, because we saw the friggin' baby Sky Bison, but...
This is the best part of my life.
Yeah, but
everything worth it for maybe
it's a very insignificant plot overall. And then we see the Cat Ang picture.
Oh my god! I about burst into tears. Oh my god, it was beautiful.
I'm sorry, Mel is not here for this, but we see older Ang and older Katara, which are the exact same thing they are in the old Friends.
Gap beard.
They look exactly the same. The notable part is the kids as babies.
Tenzin has hair.
Tenzin has hair.
As a baby. Kaya looks super adorable as like a 2-year-old, and then
Boomy looks like he's like Boomy a mad looks, scientist and Boomy
looks
stuff
like
up.
He's Boomy, younger Boomy. Yes. Yeah.
Boomy looks like actual younger Boomy.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they named him Boomy. I don't think they saw it as a baby, but it's like, oh, how conveniently this worked out. We named him Boomy and it looks like Boomy.
Kaya's like the cutest one in this whole photo. It's amazing.
Yeah, Kaya's super cute, yeah.
She looks a lot like baby Katara.
Yeah, it's also also her seeing her like I guess she looks girly in that photo and she's like less girly now and it's cute.
Is it me or this like Aang's face kind of look more stretched out than it did when we saw him in the flashbacks?
It's possible. Yeah. We should note the existence of pictures. We saw a picture last season with Hiroshi's family.
Sure.
Any points, Delaney?
Well, like, the whole reason I was like, yes, cool, we have pictures, but the big thing that I was like, that everything I keep thinking of, like, as we go through the show is the timeline of these events. So, I remember, like, there's this epic post on Dongbu Fang that Dylan had to put, like, an adult warning on it because it's about, like, why are they so old? Like, how old were Aang and Katara when they had kids? Like, what was up? And so, I think, like, I guess that might be a factor. Like, that's, like, I guess it kind of, like, doesn't make, like, why I'm so confused, like, make sense. But, like, how... this technology developed extraordinarily quickly.
Not, like, I don't know. If you think about how Avatar was kind of...
Well, there's, like, nothing in Avatar except for the Fire Nation. And it's not like they were taking pictures.
Well, what time period are we, like, associating Avatar with in our world? Like, the 18...
I would say it's right before the Industrial Revolution or, like, beginning of it because... The Fire Nation is industrial during Avatar.
Well, you have to remember, we had photography by the Civil War, and it developed since then. And if
we're... just in Avatar, it doesn't make any sense.
I think it makes sense.
Well, it just, because, like, we don't, like, I don't know, it just, I was just really confused. If they had pictures, it would have made more sense that the Fire Nation had it. Mm-hmm. They could have tied it into the Holocaust and the Nazis and how, like, they photographed and archived everything they did. Like, the Fire Nation could have done that.
I think there's 2 points to be made here.
Pictures, though.
One, it makes sense that there's photos in Korra if we're going by the Brian theory of technology mirrors, in the Avatar world, what happens in real life. But it also would make sense that they'd have photos in Avatar. As Sam said, they did have photography during the Civil War. Even though Avatar is a little before that, we could have seen start of the... It's possible Avatar happened slightly before photography. I'm not sure the exact dates. But,
like, that's what doesn't match up for me, is that, like, we don't have any evidence of this in Avatar. And then, and to think of how quickly this happened for them to develop photos, and then now these the film slides that they're getting really close to doing, like, I mean, it's almost, like, too spread out.
Yeah, so
I don't think so at all. But...
Jeff?
So we've talked about this before with anachronisms. Camera photography started out in the 1820s, the first camera photography, so that works. However, like, if you look at Sozin's flashback, when he deployed his warships, like, 100 years before Avatar, if we take that there, like, so they have warships there, advance 100 years, they're incredibly backwards compared to what they should be. So we've established that there is some retardation in their technological development, but that's just... because they wanted that world to be the way it was.
Yeah, so we've talked about this in minicasts and stuff. The technology does not actually, despite what Brian said, it doesn't mirror what happened in our real world.
Cameras do.
So the second point to be made here is, does it make sense within Avatar's technological advancement? And I think that's subjective.
Like, sorry.
Delaney's bothered by it in terms of it not being Avatar, being there. It I think that can be debated more and more, but I don't think we should spend too much time on that.
Well, I just wanted to say something real quick to Sam about, like I understand where you're coming from, Sam. Like, I get it. Like, because, like, in our world, it totally makes sense. Like, it happened very quickly. That's how the Industrial Revolution happened. Like, it makes a lot of sense. And, like, photography was well before, like, what you would really think because of, like, it was before the actual industrial age.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, it just, for me, it's the Avatar thing. Like, it just, because, like, the, because, like, they just, like, is, like, Lies of Aang and Katara had to have been so, so weird. Like, so when you think about it, like, how they went through and, like, all these changes happening at once. Because it's even more accelerated than, like, the changes in our world.
Okay, that's all right. We could get into so much more, but I think this is a specific topic for a later time. We have not even finished the episode yet. They start planning a civil war. It's interesting that this, these episodes are named Civil Wars, but we don't actually see a civil war happen. I think what they're going for with the name is the civil wars between the sibling pairs there and the preparation for a civil war.
Double meaning, they did it!
But it's not like, it's still weird because the actual civil war isn't happened yet. Korra needs to go to Republic City to get the president on his side, but then Tonrak also said they need to get the United Forces to win the war. I thought those were separate entities. I don't see how getting the Republic City president would help getting United Forces.
Like, is he like the commander in chief? Is he like the American president and he's in charge of the armed forces? Like,
yeah. Well, because they did summon them before.
Sure, they said, but that was a distress call. That's like, someone like
an ally. I guess I'm saying, like, because they've never actually established the,
like, we still don't know what they do.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see this fleshed out later.
Although I did feel like this whole mission thing is like a video game quest. Oh no, you must go to Republic City.
Yeah, that's true. I'm kind of glad to be leaving the Southern Water Tribe, honestly. I think I've had enough. So now we get to this ending. Eska comes off with this crazy face. Roland says, is this fast enough to get away from my waterbending crazy ex-girlfriend? Why do you think I built this boat? So, this is another example of sexism from Varric that makes sense for his character, but is played for laughs. But we already hit on that. And this is also another example of Eska degrading or diminishing into this, diminishing into this crazy ex-girlfriend trope, when before she was a different trope. She was a different trope, but she was more interesting. And now we're getting
she mutated.
This bad thing, and I don't understand. This is supposed to be a funny ending. There's 2 points. One, it's a sexist, dumb ending. Two, why are they ending plot-wise on this thing? Why is it so significant that Eska is coming towards them?
Yes.
I just think this is a super unsuccessful ending.
Like, I feel like they touched upon this with, this trope in general in Avatar in Aunt Wu's Village. I can't remember the name of that. Oh, the fortune teller. There we go.
Yeah.
So, like, they took, like, Ming. She was crazy stalker girl. But I feel like they're twist, like, it's definitely much worse with
Eska. Meng had depth, and she was a good character.
And she was just one episode.
And she was also younger, and she was also just this side character.
Yeah.
She's like this, like, stalking side, but it's played for last, but it also, her actions seemed reasonable. They didn't seem, there's this crazy girl.
Girl.
She was like, we relate to Meng. She likes him, and I don't know, I thought I saw Meng as very sympathetic, whereas Eska now is just turning into a stereotype. I don't relate to her, I don't know why she's doing all this stuff,
and she's supposed to be a somewhat main character.
Yeah, and that's true, and if she's a bigger character, and it's like, this is how women act. Sigh.
It's like Mako, almost, like in season one, where, like, Mako didn't make any sense at all with his actions and just being mad all the time and crazy.
Yeah, it's like Mako in terms of bad characterization, and then on top of that, add social implications to that.
Yeah,
so that's bad. Okay. Apparently Mel's coming back soon, so hopefully she'll be here by the time we finish grading.
The full report.
So that wraps it up for the episode discussion. We are now I want overall thoughts on the episode. Now we've had time to think about it more. We're going to grade the episode on a scale of 10. It should be noted, last week, I create each week a poll on DF main page, dongbufang.net, no spaces, and you can vote on the right side on what you grade the episode. Last week, Civil Wars Part 1, you guys were fairly positive on it compared to us. 27% of you said 8 out of 10, 16% each for 7, 9, and 10, and only 5 out of 37 headed a 5 or less. So you're more positive than us. We were in the sixes range. The grading scale is a 5 is an average episode of television, not just Avatar Core of television. 10 is like the best episode ever you've seen of television. Like, I think a 10 for last episode's really, like, you're allowed to have your opinion, but I don't know if that's realistic, I'd say.
If it's the headband, yes, but...
When we're talking 10, we're talking the Siege of the North Part 2, we're talking the...
102.02, whatever.
The Season 2 finale, and I think the headband, but I wouldn't even give the headband a 10 out of 10.
Every episode of Walking Dead.
I'd give the headband a 9.8 out of 10. Like, that's how much a 10 is on the scale.
Yeah. Every episode...
I'd give episode 24 of Shingeki no Kyojin.
Okay, we could just name random stuff. Well, actually, we will be random. One of you sent an email and asked us to talk about random stuff. But anyway, let's give your overall thoughts on the episode, compare it to episodes this season, and then grade it out of 10. Let's start with Jeff.
I would say this is up to a 7.75.
7.75 out of 10. Yeah. Any additional comments?
Nothing that we haven't talked about. I just, like I said, I enjoyed it. Despite its apparent flaws.
Yeah. Okay. Delaney.
Well, I was going to give it a 7.5, but maybe 7.7, something like that. Like, it's definitely upper 7 level. Because I think I gave, like, just on the forums, I think I gave, like, last week's episode, like, a 7 or 6.5 or something.
Okay.
But I really liked it. And for me, like, the reason this episode is so much better than the other episode so far is because it's, like, the lesser of two evils. And it has less of, like, the terrible stuff. Like it does have a lot of bad stuff, and I think it's kind of, like, more it's more obvious because this episode, I think, does go the fastest out of all of them. Because, like, the pacing is, like, insane in this episode. But I feel like, because, like, the action was, like, I don't know, like, you could get into this episode better. And it wasn't, like, the other episodes, it was horrible, just, you're like, oh my god, I don't even care, and the pacing, and just the drama, and it just didn't make any sense. And, like, everything's kind of being tied up in this episode, so I guess it, because now things kind of almost make sense, so it gets a 7.5.
Okay. Sam?
I give it a 3.5 out of 10. I thought it was a really bad episode. Not like the worst episode of Korra thus far. Like we touched upon earlier, like the sexism, the bad pacing, the bad animation too. Like the CGI in this episode was just atrocious.
Sam complaining about CGI. That's a surprise.
Wasn't there a time when it got complimented?
It got complimented. Maybe like the first episode or something. But especially during the scene when they're like flying the plane, they're going towards the boat. That it was just really bad. And the only redeeming part of this episode was the baby voice and Asami, and the Katang picture. I guess not really. That's like the lower end of that list. But yeah, that's how I feel about this episode.
Cool. Mel is back right in time. No, what were overall thoughts on this episode, and what would you give it out of 10?
Ooh, 5 being the average
5
television.
Is an average television episode, yes.
I'd put it at probably like a 5.5, just because it is Korra, and they usually do even their worst episodes are better than average television, so I'd put it there. It's just, you know, all the problems I had before with the pacing, with the clunky plot, and that sort of thing. But there were things that I really did enjoy about it, like the Katang nonsense feels that happened and that sort of thing. And I mean, it did forward the plot. You know, you can't say nothing happened in it. So yeah.
This episode is super hard to grade because it's very sympathetic. It's funny, unlike the last episode, is that going for it. It's cute with the baby sky bison, and it's feelsy with the Katang picture. So it's like even though I think this is the worst episode overall so far, I can't quite I think I can give it a lower grade than last episode. Like I think it is worse. But I somewhat am more likely to want to watch it again.
So I'm not the only one then who thought this was the worst episode.
Sam graded it like a 3.5, honestly.
Okay, all right.
So I guess I'm going to give this a 5.25. Just
wow,
because
guys.
I think it's slightly better than an average episode of television because of how sympathetic it is to me. even though the plot just doesn't work for me at any point, really, the humor beats, the cuteness, the stuff, and I guess it's still just barely getting there, but the show really needs to pick it up, in my view, because it's losing me a little bit, honestly, and that's not good.
Well, this episode was, like, the first time that, like, you were talking about how it's, like, the viewership aspect of it. Like, the rest of the episodes, like especially, like, the podcast and, like, listening to Sam, like, no one cares. Like, these episodes were like, oh, we have to watch Korra.
We may have had those comments. I don't think that's true. I'm still very excited to watch Korra.
Wow. I probably seem really bad.
Well, no, I just meant, like, I didn't mean to, like, make it sound like that. But, like, it just, like, that's really the main reason, like, why I liked the episode so much, because, like, I just liked the episode. Like, there were a lot of problems with it, and I was like, ugh. But, like,
yeah,
as a whole, I
didn't
enjoy
it at all. It felt like work watching it,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I guess I'm a little different than that. I don't know.
Well, I felt that way with, like, the last three episodes. It's like, oh my god, these episodes, like, what?
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I didn't care.
I'm sure you guys are more positive than us. Weigh in on this on the forums and vote on the DF main page. It should be noted that our latest iTunes review is incredibly negative.
It's the best.
It's titled, Podcast is Depressing, and then the comment is Podcast is Horrible or something.
It's like, wow.
I mean,
depressing
can't...
podcast, horrible podcast.
Yeah,
like,
depressing
go back
podcast.
And listen to some of the shipping podcasts. I mean, it's just, you know.
We're not going to cherry coat, like.
Art mirrors life, or life mirrors art. It's Korra. It's her fault.
If the show's not
fault.
Good.
It's the point I was trying to make.
I still think we're fairly positive. Honestly, like, I understand being upset that we're negative. Honestly, that review is hilarious, though. I still think Mel's Game of Thrones podcast review, I'll Stick With It For Now, is the review king. But this one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Horrible, depressing podcast, horrible podcast.
He gave us 4 out of 5 stars.
On that and yours, on this, it was a 1 out of 5 stars.
Oh, my guy was a bit nicer.
Anyway, okay.
I wonder if it's, like, depressing because it's horrible, or it's horrible because it's depressing.
These are the mysteries of life. Like, okay.
Why do we exist?
We have to go fast.
If you
enjoyed today's podcast, no, that's not this line. For you, the listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast, Audible has a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial. You can go to audibletrial.com/FTSW. It's actually free, and if you want it to be free, you cancel the subscription after 14 days, etc. Delaney is going to recommend Leviathan by Scott Westerfeld.
Well, I'm pretty sure everyone on the planet has read a Scott Westerfeld book at some point in their life. Like, he's just one of those young adult novels. Really?
I have not.
No. Ooh, I've never even heard of him, which is all
okay, he wrote Uglies and Pretties and all those books.
Oh,
that...
okay. I know those books.
I still didn't read those books, even though they're, like, the most
popular
books ever.
Like,
I've never
I
read them, but I know of them.
Anyway, talk about this book specifically.
All right, well, if you like sci-fi and history and crazy nonsense, these are the books for you. It's a trilogy. It's the Leviathan trilogy. It's Leviathan, Behemoth, and Goliath. I'm in the middle of Behemoth right now. Well, it's about, it follows World War I, and it's, like, it's an alternate history, and it's advanced technology. So the world is split into Darwinists who, like, they've mastered biology, and we have, like, crazy airplane creatures. And Clankers, who it's, like, steampunk technology, and the world's at war. So that's what, like... So it's just the technology aspect and this alternate history. So it's pretty fantastic.
Cool.
And they, like... So it's just alternate history, sci-fi, what's not to love.
That does sound interesting. I think you were telling me about this book before, actually.
It's so good.
And you can...
And the title's cool, so look at... Like, I mean, the title... The book cover is
good. The title?
Good, like,
I mean, Leviathan's a pretty good title, but,
well,
yeah.
It's not... We're not talking about Hobbes. Like, this is a fiction book. It's not... We're not going to make you read this political treatise. No.
Anyway,
wait, actually, I think my sister might have read this, and she really liked it.
Cool.
So.
Yeah, double recommendations here.
Yeah,
you can
see.
You can get it for free on an audiobook at audibletrial.com/FTSW. It is on... Listen to it on Audible.
Why do we always recommend young adult novels?
Because they're fun.
Because we're...
See, no,
they're
right.
Not... I don't know the meaning of fun.
Yes, <I'm> not. Okay.
So I hate young adult novels.
Okay, I want to note here that if you're listening on iTunes last week, the end of the podcast cut off, and we're not sure why. I'm looking into it.
Oh, I'm the one who noticed that.
Yeah,
that's probably why you said that.
Yeah, exactly. If good job, Sam. If you listen to this podcast and we don't end on the unison whatever, if you haven't listened before, it'll make sense when you get to it. If you don't hear that, go to donbufang.net/podcast or donbufang.tumblr.com to listen to the end of the podcast. I will look into why it's cutting off on iTunes. I apologize.
Is it because of iTunes update or something, maybe?
iTunes is odd, honestly. iTunes also doesn't update.
iTunes is the worst.
They're not the worst. I mean, that's how most people listen to the podcast, but yeah. Let us check in on our theories / present new theories. It should be noted that we are an hour and 14 minutes in, so we're limited in time. Jeff, you said you are down on your theory. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so Korra went into the Avatar state and did something actually a little bit impressive.
Wow, what praise.
I was being, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Impressive in cotton comparison.
Anyway, Jeff's theory is that Korra in the Avatar state only has access to Aang and not to the rest of the Avatars. So why do you think this episode?
Well, okay, so my basic for thinking that is that she hasn't done anything yet that Aang couldn't have done by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if Aang could have waterbended the ships away by himself like she did. I don't know if he might have gotten more powerful as he got older, but the Aang that we knew probably could not have done that. Would have needed
to this scene for me, like, cemented your theory for me. Like, I was like, I know what Jeff's talking about
do
now.
Do tell. Why do you
so I'm that? Watching this episode, like, we're watching, like, the scene, and I'm like, this is really unimpressive, Korra. Like, why are you, like, I think part of it is because we saw, like, amazing, ridiculous bending in Avatar, and we just expect amazingness all the time. Because I think we've talked about that before, how, like, Aang and Katara and all of them, like, they were amazing benders. Everyone we dealt with in Avatar, they were amazing benders, and we did see subpar benders, but with Korra, they're all kind of, like, average. Like, I wouldn't say Mako's that great of a bender. Like, they're pro benders. They're not, like, the masterful benders that we've seen that we're used to in Avatar. So that might be part of it, why I was just like, I'm not really impressed. Like, I didn't know she was just gonna, like, she made a bubble and, like, moved them. Like, that wasn't really impressive. Like, I'm glad she didn't, like, dunk the boats, but I don't know what I was expecting, but I just wasn't that impressed with her, like, nudging them slightly out of the way.
Yeah, so I'm with Delaney here. When she did that, I thought of Jeff's theory, and I was like, oh, I think the Avatar state would have done something different than this.
Or, like, if they lifted the boat up and, like, over them, like, that would have been cool.
While I agree that, with you, Jeff, that Aang may have not been a good enough waterbender to do this when the show ended, I certainly think he could have gotten there within his lifetime. And
Tara probably could have.
It'd probably be expected that he gets there within his lifetime.
Well, I mean, like, 12-year-old Aang in the Avatar state, like, destroyed the Fire Nation fleet in Siege of the North Part 2.
It should be noted we're talking about Aang not in the Avatar state waterbending with the whole Aang with the Yodis the 12. But I agree. We're used to the Avatar state doing so much more impressive things, and it's like, continually, we're seeing it just, it's like, oh, this is kind of powerful, but it's not really doing anything.
Aang did cool stuff when he wasn't in the Avatar state.
A couple of things, though. Like, at the end of Season 1, Aang, you know, destroyed the Fire Nation. I feel like that wasn't as much the Avatar state as it was the Water Spirit going all nuts on him.
Okay.
Second, though, so it's possible that there's a compromise in this theory. Maybe it's not just Aang, but maybe part of it is that she doesn't have full access to the Avatar state because she hasn't done her chakra thing.
Yeah.
So that part could still hold. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I feel like she relies on it so much more than everybody else. Maybe she's like, I mean, like, maybe there's a limit to the Avatar state. Like, you can only tap on it so much. You know what I mean? Like, battery power. So it sounds really stupid when you say it like that. But I don't know. Like, she uses it for the wrong reasons.
It's like how in Tony Hawk, like, Pro Skater, they had, like, a special meter.
Yes,
and, like,
exactly.
You can do special tricks for, like, a limited amount of time until the special meter runs out, and then you have to build it up again.
Thank you, Sam. That's exactly what I was thinking.
No problem.
Like, really needed that.
I love Tony Hawk games.
They are the best.
I'm personally still in on your theory, Jeff. I think, I agree this is interesting, what you did here, but I think it's still highly plausible.
Okay.
I wasn't even, like, a part of your theory, Jeff, and this episode, I was like, Jeff's right. Like, this episode, like, made me believe in you, Jeff.
I think it's certainly notable how underpowered your Avatar state is, at the very least. I don't have anything to add to my theory. I think we'll have stuff to talk about next week when Eska's fighting them. Delaney, you posted a theory on the forums that I thought was very interesting. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, all right, well, I guess I'm kind of like Jeff. I'm like, this kind of killed my theory, but at the same time, I still have faith. So my theory is that I just have a theory about how the season's going to go. Like, because what we've seen, Jinora and the spirit world and all that stuff, and how we were saying in the beginning of the season, that the air babies and the cloud babies, their conflict, like, it's going to tie in because they're the same conflict. It's completely paralleled, and we got confirmation of that this episode and how it's all tied together, and it's going to lead to Jenora. She wants to learn more about her family. She wants, like, why was Aang like? She wants answers for her aunt and her uncle, for her father, and some advice on, like, how to deal with her own siblings. And so, like, that kind of leads to her spiritual journey and seeking out Aang. And this episode, well, like, because they didn't do any touch-up on it, like, it seemed to me like they just ended the conflict this episode. Which makes my, like, theory, like, crumble and die.
Yeah, I thought they addressed your thing in a way that was different than you said they would address it, I guess.
I mean, there was definitely a parallel there.
I still think it's interesting, Jenora looking into it and stuff, and I think we're going to get something like that. But it seemed to me like this was the resolution of the siblings, the two siblings, this episode.
That's what I was thinking also. Like, it just, but what I also thought was interesting, I don't know if it was brought up, but, like, Kaya, the middle child, ran off. Iki, she ran off. Like, they're, like, the parallels in this are ridiculous.
Yeah,
I agree. And which makes the resolution of this conflict just so much more terrible. Because, like, I feel like they really could have done a lot with this. Like, I thought this was going to be the plot for, like, at least two more episodes.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to go on for a while.
I think it was certainly an unsatisfying resolution, especially when you try to look into it deeper. I wouldn't be surprised if we get back to this, though. It seemed like a definitive end, but we could get back to it.
I don't feel anything's resolved. It was just surface resolution, like, sorry we did the thing, but not sorry that we think that Dad was a bad father.
Yeah, well, they'll definitely get back to the Aang part of it.
They're just not fighting anymore.
Not so sure about the younger siblings. Ty had a theory. I'm sorry, I'm going kind of fast here. Ty had a theory on the forums last week. He thought that Rohan would be an airbender because that way there'd be four airbenders for Tenzin's kids, and one could, like, oversee each air temple.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I thought it was great.
I think that makes sense. I think it seems like more of a fanfic thing, but also it seems like something that they could do in, like, the epilogue of Korra. They could be like, and then each air kid started restoring airbending culture to each air temple. Like, I feel like that's, like, something that they could present at the end.
And that could tie into, specifically from this episode, how Tenzin's children would carry on the legacy of Avatar Aang, just like the three kids, like, they're trying to, and Tenzin wouldn't really let them, but the Air Nomad kids would try and carry on the legacy in their own way.
Yeah.
Yo, that's cool. Like, every single airbender that's going to happen now is a direct descendant from Avatar Aang.
Yeah. I said this months and years ago, and nobody gave a crap. And now
I care, Mel.
How cool is it that every single airbender is going to be a descendant of Avatar Aang? I'm like, I said that the first.
We're gonna make a hipster meme for you, Mel.
My hipster name is Blueberry Spice. That's my new Instagram handle. Look me up
on the forums. I don't think that's true. On the forums, the chosen one, new to the forums, had a really interesting theory.
The chosen one.
Yeah,
it's
a clever name. I'm kind of tired of Juan puns, but it's okay. Concerning the statue Jenora was looking at in the previous episode, we're talking about, he wrote this last episode, so we're talking about the Southern Lights here. I'm pretty sure it's Avatar Juan. The swirly parts around the statue, as mentioned on the podcast, do look like the spirit bending swirls. However, the part behind Avatar's figure looks more like an owl to me. My theory is that Avatar Juan was turned into the owl spirit Wan Chi Tong by the use of spirit bending. This can also explain Wan Chi Tong's reappearances in Book 2 and his great knowledge on the world's history, etc., because he has been alive since the start of the Avatar cycle collecting information. A possible connection to Dylan's theory would be that Unalaq discovered his spirit bending, or some sort of extension of what we have seen him do, could change a person into a spirit, and vice versa, and he used this power to change Desna and Eska into spirits and the people. Okay. First of all, Mel's going to be like, we were on this before.
I did, right away.
Right when we learned he was Wan Chi Tong, they wouldn't shut up about...
No, when they said his name was Wan, and it meant 10,000, we were like, wait, Wan Chi Tong, what does that mean? And we were like, interesting, Wan and Wan. And
we
then
being
Wan
the Hot Pockets.
Yeah, Ali, Sam, and I. And then Wan Chi Tong shows up in the trailer, and we like attacked Dylan because he was like, no, you're wrong. And he's like...
Okay. I like this theory, but this better not be true because Mel would not shut up about it if it was true.
I have something like I'm the one who came up with it anyway.
Yes, Delaney.
Well, what I think would be cool is if this actually is true, other than Mel being right and like tormenting Dylan for the rest of his life. What would be like if this is true? That changes everything we know about the like the state of the Avatar spirit. Because then, like, we, as far as we know, or like what we've been led to believe, is that the Avatar, the past reincarnations of the Avatar, are part, are in like the soul. I'm air quotes here. You can't see it, but they're happening, mm-hmm. and like that they reside in the soul, like of the Avatar. Like the Avatar spirit resides in the current Avatar, and the rest of the reincarnations are there, and they're there to help them in when the Avatar state is called upon, or just to guide them in general. If this is true, then either the Avatar spirit is just lacking Avatar 1, or that they don't reside in the current Avatar all the time. It's only when they call upon the Avatar state, which would be really weird. Like, summons, and they get like, oh, my pager's going off, I gotta go.
Yeah.
But, so, I feel like that would be really, like, that would completely change everything that we've been kind of led to believe about the Avatar state, yeah, and so about just the Avatar spirit.
I think that, the concept of the Avatars, past Avatars, being physically, or not physically, you know, like, whatever, physically, within the current Avatar, spiritually within the current Avatar, is not developed enough by the show that they could pull this off, like,
yes.
pretty easily, plot-wise. I think it's really interesting, one, being Wan Chitong, but also being Fakora. If Aang went into the Avatar state when he was in the library, like, that would have contradicted this, but I don't think he did. Because then Wan would have been called, and Wan Chitong wouldn't have been able to be there anymore.
Maybe Wan Chitong just ate Wan. He just devoured him.
I don't know if that's true. That's interesting.
it is true.
But I do like the connection between Wan, like, spirit bending himself into a spirit, and then Unalaq discovering this and learning himself how to spirit bend people into spirits. I think that.
Yeah, but then they would have to retcon Wan Chitong's voice into Stephen Yeun's.
Well, maybe owls have different voices than people.
Owls have different voices. It's like the Avatar state, how it changes the Avatar's voice, so you could go with that, like, the spirituality.
Yeah, I think they're going to do something like what the Chosen One has suggested.
The Chosen One.
I think this is on the right track. I don't know if what's going to happen exactly, though. Maybe it could be, but certainly there's probably going to be some connection, as much as I don't want it to be.
Well, okay. I feel like it will definitely tie into, like, because we really don't have a very good understanding of how the reincarnations work and what it means for the Avatar spirit, because the Avatar spirit, like, it resides in the Avatar, like, because the Avatar spirit was made mortal and bound to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is, like, the immortal spirit in a mortal body. Like, what does this mean? So I guess maybe that'll be part of it, like, explaining or...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, this is really strange.
Yes, and we have to rush. We have one last theory in the form of voicemail from Felicity again, so let's listen to that.
Answering my voicemail last week. So, my friends brought up an interesting point after we watched the episode on Friday, and I wanted to know your opinion. She pointed out that both Aang and Korra's families were kind of being messed around with, as in, like, they're both having their own problems and fights. And she and I kind of thought, well, do you think it's the dark spirits doing? Do you think that because the dark spirits apparently didn't want the Avatar to open up the spirit portal, the dark spirits might have a grudge against the Avatar and maybe are messing around with what's connected to the previous and the current Avatars? And maybe Iki was taken into the spirit world?
Yeah, so...
Well, no!
So this was sent in before we saw this episode, so Iki's not in the spirit world. But I think it's an interesting concept that, like, the dark spirits are, like, messing with the family dynamics of Korra's family and Tenzin's family.
Like, they're just like, we're gonna possess and be like, there's a rain cloud over you all, and just, like,
it would be
upset.
Like, it'd be like the evil ring, the Lord of the Rings. Like,
there you go.
Everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're, like, possessing anyone or, like, physically messing with them, but, like, kind of somehow spiritually disrupting the two families,
yeah.
making them
like
fight.
The chakras.
Yeah, well, I don't know about chakras, but yeah, I think certainly that'd be an interesting way to take this.
I don't know if I have enough evidence for that. I mean, it'd be cool, but, like, I think it's normal enough that it would just fly by.
What I thought was the really interesting aspect was that I really think is more plausible is that they're messing with the connection between Korra and the past avatars, and that's what leads to the journey with Juan to read us to be able to make that connection back.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think that's definitely plausible. Thanks, Felicity, for sending a voicemail again. Any of you can voicemail, send us voicemail. Go to the podcast page, dongwufeng.net/podcast, and there's a thing that pops up on the right, and you can click that and send us a voicemail. I guess I can't promise in the future to play all of these voicemails if we start getting, more than one, because we're going to be crunched for time here. We're just hitting on 90 minutes here. But definitely send them in. We'll at the very least respond to them. Cash emailed us in, and thank you for emailing, Cash. He's asking us about other nerdy things, other than Avatar that we can discuss, and we can't really get into that now because we hit time, but we can talk about other stuff, I guess. And he also says he liked the podcast on TV tropes, spirituality within the Avatar universe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, and cheers from Great Britain, he says. Yes,
I like your name.
Yes, cool. Thank you. And you can email us at dylan@dongwufeng.net. I'm sorry, I'm going very fast through everything.
Wow, you're just, really intense about this time limit.
You gotta hit 90, we're stopping at 90 minutes. That's what I've decided this season. Okay. Thank you for listening. I thought this was a pretty good podcast, other than Mel disappearing half of it.
Look.
how was the crisis resolved?
I mean...
Is everyone okay?
She's chilling, it's okay, fine.
Okay, cool. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel, Delaney, Sam, and Jeff. That's true. Co-hosts have been Blueberry, Spicehead, Twinkle, Starchild, Princess Rainbow, and Juniper Lightningbug.
No one hasn't! I refuse. No.
I love that you're Princess Rainbow. It's so funny.
No!
We have to end on Blueberry, Spicehead.
I'm gonna kill you!
That's me!
I can't even think of the credits now. I produce and edit the podcast, created by me and AJ, Dongfeng's owned by Jake, tech directors, AJ, Kevin, Jeff, musical credits to the Yoshida brothers, Luke Tripp, Jeremy Zuckerman. I think that might be it. Kevin did the logo and podcast banner. So that pretty image you see is done by Kevin Ate, alternate cop Ate, Kevin Copa. He was a former co-host on the podcast. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast and clicking on donate at the top.
Has anybody actually done that yet?
No. That's unfortunate. But you guys could donate, and if you can support the podcast also.
Oh, because all of our listeners are 15. Don't have any money.
We could do a first problem. Two to donate gets featured on podcast.
I mean, we're going to get your name shouted out by us if you donate, definitely. But you can also.
I'll get a tattoo of your name.
I don't think you're going to do that. You can also contribute by getting your free audiobook download. That also supports the podcast financially, so thank you. If you're curious about us, the co-hosts, you can view our podcast bios on the podcast page, dongfeng.net/podcast. I know I have to update mine, saying I don't ship Boleska anymore, which is annoying.
You should probably do that too.
Yeah.
Mine is the saddest, most terrible thing ever, and I apologize to everyone who's been
haven't read mine.
It's really
so
not.
It's
Sam's is the best.
Objectively, Sam's is the best bio, but all of
why?
Yours are good. Because you're good at bio writing, obviously.
Even
though in the bio you say you're not good at bio writing. Why it's good. So email, Tumblr, Twitter, Dongwufeng, no spaces for all of those. Dylan to Dongwufeng for email, so you can send us voicemail. Thanks for listening, guys. Also, if you tweet at us or give us an ask on Tumblr next week after the episode airs, but before 8:30 Eastern, then you can give us your opinion on the episode and we can mention that. All of our feedback so far has been from the previous week, but if you get in that hour and a half period after the
as long as we don't hit 90 minutes.
Exactly. Well, we're over 90 minutes, so about 3 minutes. But anyway, thanks for listening. We're going to end on a Blueberry
Spice Head.
Are there any alternate options?
Yes. No, there are none.
So anyway.
Mel's no.
Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Blueberry Spice Head.
Blueberry Spice Head.
Blueberry Spice Head.
I'm not Princess Rainbow.